So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. All these great creation passages this morning, and the one thing that Jesus wants to talk about in the creation passage, the lectionary collaborators gave us, is this part about divorce, which is seemingly the most thorny of all of the whole passage, especially for us in our modern 21st century environment. We know that we've done nothing more in the church for really the last 20 years than argue about what marriage is. And who can marry who? And who does the marrying? I mean, does the state marry people or does the church marry people? Or are they two different things? Can you be married in the eyes of the state, not in the eyes of the church? Can you be married in the eyes of the church and not in the eyes of... I mean, we've done nothing but like argue about these. And just because it's thorny now doesn't mean it wasn't thorny then. And in fact, we know it was thorny then because this passage starts, as many do, when Pharisees, scribes, and Sadducees show up. They ask a question to test Jesus. Just the way that this is a hard topic in our own day, it is also a hard topic in their day. And Jesus has to address it, and we heard all this great creation stuff and all the other readings this morning, and the beautiful Hebrews reading about how all things were made for God and all things exist through God. And then Jesus wants to talk about divorce, or these folks show up and want to talk about what does it mean to be married and can people be divorced. So let me just state what I think is least obvious to me, which is, along with these other problems of who can marry who, or what should be married, or who can do the marrying, or where do you get married? Can you get married in the park? Can you have to get married in the church? Can you get married? I've heard of people getting married in breweries, and if that's your wedding planning, you can call me. I can do that one for free. So... But I do think all of us, I'll just back up a moment before I get to kind of what I think is obvious to me about what might be going on in this passage that might not be, clear to others. And I say obvious, and I mean, after I spent my entire life thinking about what this Jesus could possibly mean here, and maybe had a light bulb moment in the shower one morning as I had stopped thinking about it. Every single person here has some experience with divorce. Every single person. And you've either been divorced, you have family members that are divorced, you have parents that are divorced, you have children that are divorced. And my guess is that if we sat down and talked about what that experience was like, nobody in here would say that while they were going through the divorce or experienced a loved one going through a divorce, or seeing a friend going through a divorce, would say that that was a positive experience. I'm not saying that divorce is not sometimes have better outcomes for the individuals involved than what that union had created. And we're getting there. But there is nothing that is fun or is uplifting or is glorifying about going through a divorce. In fact, if it were, we would not have so much shame around it. I have twice in my life had people close to me who I did not even know were struggling in their marriage who called me up to say, me and my spouse, we got divorced today. And I was, in the first time it happened to me, I was like, what are you talking about? I just saw you at Christmas. And you were together. They didn't call me up to say, we're getting divorced, we're thinking about getting divorced, we're having a hard time. They called me up and said, it's over. And I thought, wow, why would you keep it such a secret? And then it happened to me again, in the exact same way. Someone called me up when it was completely over. People that we were very, very close to. People that we should have known and didn't know that things weren't always great in that relationship. But it's because of the shame that getting a divorce carries. And so part of the difficulty, and you know this with this passage, is that Jesus seems to be tone deaf to the actual reality of people getting divorced. that there does not seem to be any compassion in this teaching that he gives to his disciples after the crowds have left, where he tells them, if a man gets divorced and marries another, he commits adultery, and if a woman divorces her husband, marries another, commits adultery. That seems to not be a very pastoral teaching on Jesus' side, and it has created a lot of hurt, a lot of guilt, and a lot of shame for something that we all know through our own experience is one of the most terrible things that people go through in their lives, even when it has to happen. Even when on the other side of it, it's much better is not even the right word, but it's something less awful than what that marriage was. So I do think what's obvious to me is that Jesus cannot be telling us divorce is bad in this passage. If Jesus has anything else to do in it, it cannot be telling us it's bad. Because that is a colossal waste of divine revelation to come and tell us divorce is bad if we could have figured that out on our own already. And we have figured it out on our own already. And we live with the consequences of these broken unions all over the place. So if we think the point of this passage is for Jesus to take a hard line on marriage and just to show up in God's revelatory way and tell us that divorce hurts people, what a complete waste of time. And what a complete waste of ink on the gospel writers to include it. So if that's not happening, what's going on? Well, I have some ideas, but I have no solutions. You've got my assumption now about what Jesus is doing. But now, if that's not what Jesus is doing, which is the way we have often presented this passage, the reason I take that on is because you have heard that sermon, I bet. You've heard that sermon from this very passage that Jesus is taking hard line on marriage. I don't think that could even be possible for all the reasons I mentioned. Well, there are a couple of things I think that are important or to note interpretively. One is, how does Jesus respond to this test that the Sadducees or the Pharisees bring him right off the bat? And one is, he asks them, what does Moses command you? And in fact, they tell him exactly what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 1, which is in the law of Moses, which is the law of the land, and which is that which comes from God, divinely given to Moses to give to the ancient people of Israel. It says that a man can write a certificate of divorce if he is, you know, it's very vague. There's something unhappy about the way that the wife is performing, and he can divorce her. So they've got precedent. They've got actual statute. They can do this, and they say, yeah, this is what it says, but we're asking you. And so Jesus then responds and says, this is fascinating to me for a whole set of reasons, but Jesus says, Moses wrote that. And unpack this for a moment. He asked them what Moses commanded them, not what God commanded them. Moses commanded you, and Moses wrote that because you had hard hearts. He already has taken that statute kind of out of the realm of what might be divinely given, which is awfully strange because it's packed in the middle of all these laws that they think are divinely given. So Jesus is taking on a law that seems to come from God already. He doesn't say it's wrong, but he does give it a reason. He says it's for hardness of heart. And then the second thing that Jesus does is he puts it in contrast to something else that is already in the books of Moses, which is this creation story. And in this creation story, he says, here's what happens. Two people get together, they leave something old, and they form something new. And the purpose of that new thing is so it cannot be broken. So if we're going to start to interpret or try to figure out what Jesus is teaching the Pharisees in the public and then his disciples in private, we've got to understand that Jesus takes two passages basically from the same source and he lays them against one another. And says, we got to read both of these, and Jesus gives priority to the creation one. The second move that Jesus makes, and this is one of the more shocking moves of this whole thing, is that Jesus, when he meets with his disciples, says this teaching that you've all heard about, like if a man divorces his wife and marries another, he commits adultery. And then he adds something which is not actually in the Mosaic law or version of this. If a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. So Jesus, number one, he has put these things at odds with one another in their own text, and now he has seemed to make them egalitarian. He has riffed on them already, making it a possibility that a woman could divorce her husband, which actually is not a possibility. A woman could not have divorced her husband in the same way. But he is saying, if this situation occurs, and I do want to dig into this because in all of these teachings of Jesus, and this teaching about divorce and marriage comes up in three of the four Gospels, it is never identical. But here, it seems to be a very specific situation. It seems to be that there is some intent to write a divorce in order to form this new union. And those of you that have gone through divorces like that would say, of course that is adultery. Of course, if someone left me or I left someone else with the sole purpose of forming a new union, that is, of course, adultery. But here's the rub, and here's where I think we start to understand what Jesus is getting at, which is, under the letter of that Mosaic law, if you write that writ of divorce and hand it to him, you can marry that other person and have not broken a law. And this is a teaching that comes up over and over and over again in Jesus' ministry, and that is, just because you follow the rules doesn't mean you are being moral. And I think that's the point that Jesus finally gets at here. Jesus is saying, there is a way that you can follow rules and yet totally, unequivocally be sinning, even though you have followed the letter of the law. And in fact, in my own life, and folks that have seen me in meetings sometimes when new statutes or regulations or canons in the church are being rolled out, I'm a little bit cynical. I tell them the only reason to write a law is so that you can go on doing what you're doing and feel like you are not sinning now. It's a salve to your conscience because now you've got a measure. That's what Jesus is taking on with these Pharisees, which is, it is 100% possible to follow Moses' law that came down on the mountain from God and still be doing harm. And why is that? And that's why Jesus contrasts that law in Deuteronomy with the story of creation, which is the whole point of marriage, is for two folks to get together, to leave what they had in the past and to form something new. We don't think about it this way, but the act of marriage is participating in the creative acts of God. When you get married, this is not about you and taking one other member into your family that already exists. This is about you and that person making something that never existed before. That's a creative view of this. And when you get married, it is a way that you understand God better because you're participating in the creative process of God. Which is why divorce, as we discover on our own and don't need a divine to tell us, stinks so badly. Because divorce, no matter how necessary it is an uncreative process. It's a destructive process. It tears down things that we've made. And we have to recognize that. And what I think Jesus is saying is, if you are looking for ways to manipulate that uncreative process so that you can get what you want, of course you are sinning. Not saying that if you are in a thing that has been created that has done nothing but cause suffering and pain and resentment and shame, that it shouldn't be done away with. If you have created something that causes you sorrow only, it might be time to remake things. Which is also a biblical story as well. Because the creation story is followed very closely on its heels by the story of the flood, which is not about anger, not about vengeance, but the story about sorrow, because God made something that needed to be unmade and started over. Is it easy for us as a community to make rules about what it means to be married and not married? Do we need to be like telling folks they absolutely have to stay married at all costs? Do we have to be telling folks, nah, it doesn't matter, you know, we'll figure it out later? I don't know. Totally. But what I do know is that when marriage works, it is the gift of making you the co-creator with God. Making something brand new. And it's a grace. It's a sacrament. It's a way that we get to know God better. And it shouldn't surprise us when it doesn't work that it hurts. But it also shouldn't surprise us that when things get unmade sometimes, God can still be there and make them new again. Amen.